The olive branch of Noah told of hope, of life, following a literal flood. And in David's Jerusalem, the Mount of Olive Trees, overlooking what will be the Temple Mount, reflects the birth of hope after a deluge of despair. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 10, The Mount of Olives, Jerusalem, and the Birth of Hope. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. When Menachem Begin pondered his own passing, his thoughts turned to one mountain near Jerusalem. A handwritten note left for his right-hand man Yechiel Kadishai speaks volumes today. Begin wrote, Yechiel Yakiri, my dear Yechiel, Bevo hayom, when the day comes, Hoel na likro ba'oznehem shel yikirei nafshi, yididim v'chavirim. Please call in the ears of those dear to me, friends and comrades, et bakashati zo, this request. Ani mevakesh likboroti bahar hazeitim. I request that you bury me on the Mount of Olives, liad Meir Feinstein and Moshe Barzani, next to Meir Feinstein and Moshe Barzani. Vahareni modelcha l'chol mi sheyasa l'kiyum habakasha. And I thank you and all those that will act to fulfill this request. The Mount of Olives, not technically part of Jerusalem, but wholly bound up with it and the Jewish relationship with the sacred city. The ridge that looms across the valley directly east of the Temple Mount, it is the site to which Jews came to pray for centuries during the diaspora. And for centuries after that, it was a site where they chose to be buried. Named originally for the olive trees that apparently adorned it, it became for Jews a symbol of longing for the future. Begin's choice to be buried there contained a symbolism that was immediately understood by all. Rather than to be interred on Mount Herzl with modern Israeli statesmen, heroes, warriors, and generals, he would choose to be buried next to two young freedom fighters who had died in prison and among the generations of Jews of the past in whose name he had fought for all his life. What is the origin of the scriptural significance of the Mount of Olives? Why are its original olive trees so central to its symbolism? Why is it so important to the Jewish relationship with Jerusalem? It is at this point in the story we tell that the Mount of Olives makes its first scriptural appearance, and the very brief mention in the Bible tells us a great deal about all that the mountain comes to mean. We have seen in previous episodes how David's conquest of Jerusalem was followed immediately by the construction of his palace at the summit of the city, beyond its original walls, and then by the denial of his dream to build a temple atop Mount Moriah. Thus, for the rest of his life, it was David's palace that would have dominated Jerusalem. We are therefore intended to understand the literary symbolism and painful irony when the next chapter in Jerusalem begins. It is at Jerusalem's highest point, looming over all he surveys, that David brings about his downfall. The book of Samuel tells us, and it came to pass in an evening tide that David arose from off his bed and walked upon the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman washing herself, and the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David sent and inquired after the woman, and one said, Is not this Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? And David sent messengers and took her, and she came in unto him, and he lay with her. Bathsheba becomes pregnant, and David eventually sends Uriah the Hittite to the front lines of battle, where he falls. This leads to the confrontation between David and Nathan the prophet, who delivers the fearful message. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul. And I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives unto thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given unto thee many other things. Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with the sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy wife, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me, and hast taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be thy wife. Thus saith the Lord, Behold, I will raise up evil against thee out of thine own house. David's immediate penitence guarantees that, unlike Saul, the Davidic dynasty will not be destroyed. But what God promises comes to pass. Evil does rise out of David's house. David's son Absalom oversees a literal palace coup, overthrowing his father, and David flees. The book of Samuel continues. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, Arise, and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us, and smite the city with the edge of the sword. We must at this moment attempt to imagine the turmoil in David's mind. He knows that his line will continue, but that does not mean that he will ever see Jerusalem again. For all he knows, his dynasty will go on through the son that has overthrown him. David's source of escape is to the east, into the Kidron Valley, and he is joined by Zadok the priest, who remains loyal to him. The Bible continues. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. And lo, Zadok also and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. It is the worst moment of David's life, but incredibly, David's presence of mind remains, and his vision of Jerusalem's future looms larger than his own well-being. Jerusalem is to be the dwelling place of the divine, whether or not he survives. And so he immediately decides that the Ark, the throne of the Almighty, must return to Jerusalem. Samuel tells us, And the king said unto Zadok, Carry back the Ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again, and show me both it and his habitation. But if he says, I have no delight in thee, behold, here I am. Let him do to me as seemeth good to him. David traverses the valley of Kidron, and he begins his ascent on the mountain east of Jerusalem, and it is here that today's subject makes its first appearance. And David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives, and wept as he went up, and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that were with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. It is at this moment, mourning, ascending the Mount of Olives, that David receives his worst news yet. His most clever and trusted advisor, Achitophel, has joined the rebellion. Achitophel is cunning. Statecraft, strategy is his specialty. This is a blow. Without comparing David spiritually to other more modern leaders, politically, historically, it is akin to King Louis learning that Cardinal Richelieu has joined the English, or say, Richard Nixon being apprised that Kissinger had gone to work for the Soviets. Defeating Absalom is one thing, overcoming Achitophel is another. And it is at that point, ascending the Mount of Olives, that David utters his first prayer following the rebellion, asking that Achitophel's influence be undermined. Again, the Bible. And one told David, saying, Achitophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Achitophel into foolishness. David's prayer on the ascension of the Mount is immediately answered by the Almighty. For there David meets another member of his court, Hushai the Archite, whom he sends back to Jerusalem as a mole to counteract Achitophel. It's a strategic stab in the dark following his prayer, and it works. The ingenious Achitophel advises Absalom to strike David immediately when the monarch is most weak. Again, the Bible. Moreover, Achitophel said unto Absalom, Let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night. And I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid. And all the people that are with him shall flee, and I will smite the king only, and I will bring back all the people unto thee. Strategically, Absalom ought to have listened to Achitophel. But instead, he also asked Hushai, David's mole, what he thinks. Then said Absalom, Call now Hushai the Archite also. Hushai, in turn, advises Absalom to wait and assemble the people to battle David's men. In his words, Therefore I counsel that all Israel be generally gathered unto thee, from Dan even to Beersheba, as the sand that is by the sea for multitude, and that thou go to battle in thine own person. And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Achitophel. Achitophel's advice is ignored, and Absalom's one chance to kill his father David disappears. Achitophel, cunning man that he is, now knows that David's victory is imminent, and he goes home and takes his own life. All this, the Bible tells us, was in response to David's prayer that Achitophel's advice be undermined. As Scripture tells us, for the Lord had appointed to defeat the good counsel of Achitophel, to the intent that the Lord might bring evil upon Absalom. Absalom tarries, David regroups, and defeats his son in battle. Thus Hushai, met by David on the Mount of Olives, succeeded in ensuring David's return to Jerusalem. Thus was David's prayer on the Mount of Olives answered on the Mount of Olives. Thus was David's devotion to the divine on the Mount of Olives, rewarded on the Mount of Olives. To put it another way, it is at the worst moment in David's life that suddenly, on the Mount of Olives, hope is born. Hope for David's return to Jerusalem. Hope for the restoration of David's Jerusalem. It's at this point, ladies and gentlemen, that we can understand what the olives on the Mount actually embody. For the olive branches appeared once before in the Bible, in the tale of Noah. when the dove arrived at the ark bearing a specimen from an olive tree as a sign that the flood had ceased. It's often assumed that the olive branch symbolizes peace, but as we discussed in Bible 365, this is mistaken. Peace can, of course, be a wonderful thing, but at times war can also be important. Thus, Harry Truman once famously explained to Winston Churchill that in the seal of the president, the eagle clutches an olive branch in one talon, symbolizing peace, and arrows in the other, symbolizing war, but that the eagle's head was tilted toward the olive branch, signifying the preference for peace. And Churchill supposedly responded, "In my opinion, Mr. President, the eagle's head should be placed on a swivel so that it could turn whichever way the times require." In fact, the olive branch symbolizes not peace, but hope. The olive branch of Noah told of hope of life following a literal flood. And in David's Jerusalem, the Mount of Olive Trees, overlooking what will be the Temple Mount, reflects the birth of hope after a deluge of despair. This is the first appearance of the Mount of Olives in Jewish history, but it will not be the last. We will see prophecies of redemption associated with the site. And in the centuries that follow, we will see Jews who come from all over the world to commune there and to be buried there, from simple men and women to a prime minister of Israel. And because in Jerusalem 365, our goal is not only to tell the story of the city, but also to note the profound poetry that links its generations, we must highlight how Begin's attachment to that place can be seen as a vindication of all the emotion that his people had invested in that site from David's age on. For ladies and gentlemen, could there be any greater vindication of Jewish hope than the story of a man whose entire hometown had been destroyed, whose parents had been murdered, whose brethren in Europe had been wiped out in a deluge of death, who had survived Soviet prison, who had been the most wanted man in the British Mandate, who had seen the Mount of Olives occupied by Jordan from 1948 to 1967, its graves desecrated and destroyed, and who was ultimately interred there in reverence and honor by the citizens of a restored state that he had led, overlooking a liberated Jewish Jerusalem. David's prayer on the Mount of Olives was answered, and he returned to his beloved city, thereby hinting for all of history that Jews should never give up hope, and that the prayer next year in Jerusalem would be fulfilled once again in the future. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.